Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
I'm getting 1,300 cookies per click now.
I mean, I guess the listeners at home will be curious to know what we're playing. You want to explain, since you guys all hooked on this crack addiction of a horrible game?
Well, let's start the actual podcast.
This is the actual podcast. Started. We did.
I'm not recording.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Right, so I'm talking to the audience. We're just letting it go. Yeah.
Okay. So welcome, everyone, to a cookie-filled episode of Brainstorm Brewery. Why is it a cookie-filled episode? Because Jason fucking E. Alt showed us a link. And he said, do not click the link. And then we clicked the link, and then we found this game called Cookie Clicker. And we have been playing this now for about an hour and a half.
The game's a piece of shit. It's not a great game. It's like, I'm going to hate myself tomorrow for every second I wasted playing this.
Yes.
I'll tell you exactly how long you've played it. So everyone at home, definitely don't go check out Cookie Clicker.
Please don't, if you have any hopes or sanity that you want to grasp onto.
At the very
don't
least,
click the
don't
link that I'm it. Providing in the show notes to the Cookie Clicker game. Don't click it.
He means it. I clicked it and it's a mistake.
It's bad. If you're a student in college, this is probably finals week. You definitely don't click this. This is the kind of game that will land you working in McDonald's.
An hour and a half long class, this would be a good way to waste time in it.
But do you think it would be fun if there wasn't a competition, if we didn't know that each other were clicking and we wanted to top each other?
I would have quit hours ago. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Jason had a 10-minute advantage, and then now he wants to rub it in on us, even though he had a 10-minute advantage.
It just scales. It's so awful. Like, there's no way to catch him.
No.
Speaking of scaling and being awful, how about the price on Grizzlebrand?
What happened with that?
Yeah, that went up $2 and everyone lost their mind. Like, Grizzlebrand's always been underpriced. It's a 4-of in Sneak and Show now. Gets played in Reanimator.
And people have been asking about, you know, whenever any of those really annoying, hey, I have $100 right now, what do I put it in posts came up. They said, you know, one or two cards. It's Avacyn and Grizzlebrand. Like, those have been my two picks for the last year. Like, they're just third set mythics that, in Avacyn's case, is just this giant mythic angel, and Grizzlebrand is, you know, obviously busted and sees play and legacy and all of that crap, and Grizzlebrand's going up, Avacyn's almost $20, and these are probably the next Eldrazi in terms
now,
of...
Now here's something we can actually track. We can actually answer the question, which is a bigger force, the legacy crowd or the casual crowd? Because I don't know, Grizzlebrand has got casual appeal, but not quite on the level of Avacyn.
Grizzlebrand's banned in EDH and Avacyn's not. That's a thing.
That is a thing. I guess we can kind of see if Avacyn's growth outpaces Grizzlebrand. The only explanation for something like Avacyn getting there faster than Grizzlebrand, when Grizzlebrand's a 4-of and, you know, some good legacy decks, is just the buying power of the casual community. It's hard to quantify those people that don't play in tournaments, don't have DCI numbers, and, you know, we'll play at a pre-release maybe, or less competitive than that. So I'm really interested to see how Avacyn and Grizzlebrand duke it out, because I think they were on level footing when they were first printed, and now when they diverge from each other, it'd be interesting to see which one goes up faster.
See, we don't even have that problem, Moto. We already know Grizzlebrand is a $19 card, Avacyn is a $7 card, and that is strictly because Grizzlebrand is played. And Avacyn's merely a casual card. The fact that it's a $7 casual card is actually pretty phenomenal, so.
Well, yeah, and look at, I think that Avacyn Restored is as close, like, it's basically Rise of the Eldrazi 2.0. Like, you look at Rise of the Eldrazi, everything in that set's worth money now. Like, It That Betrays, which is just a rare, and it's an Eldrazi, is like $7 or $8. All the mythics in that set, outside of like two, I think are worth real money. Avacyn Restored is probably the closest, you know, analogy going at this point in time, where it's all these mythics probably just continue to go up in price because they all have some sort of casual appeal.
You mean like three or four mythics? I'm sorry, you're talking ROE. I thought you were talking AVR for a second.
Yeah, no, I think in terms of price comparisons, you look at Avacyn Restored, and it's going to behave very similar to ROE. Because you've got Griselbrand, and you got Avacyn kind of at the top there.
What else?
Sigarda, Bruna, probably.
Sigarda, sure.
Mythic. Yeah, Bruna's bulk mythic.
What's the red-white one? Aurelia?
Gisela. Gisela, Bruna, and Sigarda all see EDH play. Like, Bruna's obviously less exciting, but she is a general.
I think she's like my favorite one. Like, if I was going to build an EDH
nuts.
Deck
just
around
go
an
full Ultron. It's so much fun.
Well, that's what I, like, she's not super expensive, but like, there is a casual player. I think those are also go up, and then, you know, we'll see whatever other mythics in that set may break out or may not, but I think it's just great. It's a, you know, it's a third set that was drafted by itself. It was only open for 3 months, blah, blah, blah.
And people really didn't like drafting it. That was another big part of it. I mean, the casual crowd was there, but the competitive crowd, like, Avacyn Restored was not a great format. Like, I didn't mind it, but it was not great.
But it was profitable for Wizards because of the casual crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sold better than,
Hell Vault brought people out of the woodwork, man.
Avacyn Restored sold better in the 3 months it was on sale than Innistrad did. I don't know that a lot of people know that, but, it sold more than Innistrad did in a 3 month period.
That's confusing.
We had Aaron Forsythe on. We interviewed him when we were at Gen Con, me and Corbin. And, you know, he was just saying, basically, you know, this is the casual crowd, and you hear a lot of competitive players complaining about the Miracles and these other cards, but the casual players love it, and it's a phenomenon that is going to continue to go on. They're going to cater to the casual crowd when they can, and they're going to cater to the competitive crowd when they can. So it's going to be an ebb and flow. So when people are complaining about the set, it's not for them. Because they're a spike, well, there's a reason for that. It's not for you.
Well, I guess I don't see the point in even bothering to tailor a set to spikes, you know, from most perspectives. You gotta have playable cards, but from all other perspectives, if you had a set that was all unicorn and every deck was unicorn tribal, spikes would figure out the best unicorn deck to build and just play Magic. You know, so really, if you can keep the gameplay the same and have it be a good game, that'll keep the spikes coming. So all the flavor stuff you do to appeal to the casuals is just printing money.
Yeah, but I still think that you need to have a couple sets. See, I get what you're saying, that you don't need to have stuff tailored to the spikes, because the spikes will just find the best cards. But you still need to have a couple good sets where it's a strong draft format, or, as you know, it's a popper draft format where the skills and your synergy of building a deck actually, you know, come forward. And I think them balancing that act is crucial.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that this set needs to be this set needs to be this. They're not mutually exclusive goals. I mean, they could have made Avacyn Restored a better draft format. Spikes would have liked it, and it still would have had all those angels that, you know, people wanted. So, like, I think it's just, they need a balance within the sets, not necessarily within.
But I think they've learned their lesson since then, too. I mean, we're saying it like it was just yesterday. We've seen 2 years worth of sets now since then, and I think they've done a much better job. Like, this one, the sealed is kind of similar, but the draft is nowhere near. I mean, I like drafting Theros a lot.
Yeah, draft on
it's
Theros.
It's much better. The sealed, definitely, I've heard people compare it to Avacyn, and I can see how it is like that just because of the lack of removal.
Right. It shows, I guess, probably the lesson they learned directly from it, in that the tools are there to make the draft, you know, a little less swingy than it was in Avacyn, even though the sets on their face are somewhat similar.
All right. So how about we move into pick of the week?
Pick of the week, pick of the week, pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
I want to go and take Jason's.
All right, go right into it. So you're going to be taking Sphinx's Revelation and buying it?
No. Jason's sending me angry messages. That's why I'm laughing here. Spellskite. It's one we've all talked about in the past. I don't think it's exactly groundbreaking, so I don't feel terrible about taking it. But Spellskite is from New Phyrexia, small open set. You know, we just saw Splinter Twin in the past week go up. Spellskite has played just as much or more as Splinter Twin. So Spellskite, I think, will be the next one to go, and it'll probably go even higher than Splinter Twin did at 10 or 11 bucks.
Yeah, we've been calling this one for a little while, or we said to pick them up for a little bit a few months ago before they saw the spike, and didn't see the spike this weekend, or has not seen the spike, because I've seen talks about it all over Twitter.
You're talking about Spellskite?
Yeah.
It hasn't really moved a ton. It went through kind of a, it spiked a year ago or six, I guess at the beginning of the year, you know, it went from $2-3 and it hit 8 to 10. And since then it kind of dropped off and it's now sitting at 8 and it hasn't really moved. And there's no way this is not a, obviously at least 10 or 11 more, but I think it's probably like $13 to $15 come modern season next summer.
Okay, that sounds good. So what about you, Ryan? What's your pick of the week?
My pick of the week, similar pickups, has nothing to do with actual competitive Magic, though. But I've had a lot more people asking me for them recently, and I've been able to move them a lot quicker. And I'm referencing the gold border cards from the World Championship decks. I have always been on these cards. I've always liked picking them up when I can find them. You can get them super cheap. I mean, even cards like Windswept Heath and these fetches that, you know, are $60-70+ in real life, you can get these gold border copies for a buck or two for the longest time, or even less in some cases. You can get them as throw-ins. And now they're just starting to hit the market, and I know that Face-to-Face has actually started selling them, and that's something that wasn't really done by retail stores, is selling them as singles before. And since then, they've been having a lot better sales on eBay. I've been moving them a lot easier, and I mean, I'm getting people who are coming up to me and taking the Force of Wills at $10 to $15 a piece. And you want to look for the ones that are rarer and only in one particular deck, or maybe not a 4X of copy. But, you know, pick up any you can because you can get them dirt cheap, and eventually, like, you should be able to move most of it. And some of the other stuff is bulk, but it moves no different than just bulk cards. So, yeah, a little off the wall, but that's where I've really been thinking about this week, investing some more money.
I use a gold-bordered Rival of Venice in my EH deck. That's certainly a format where people don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it's really coming down to, is so many people are seeing all these spikes with these cards. And, you know, there's all these potential possibilities for reprints. And, you know, the gold-border cards have no, they don't care at all as far as the price goes on if it gets reprinted or not. Like, they're not going to move in price. And they're super cheap. And it doesn't take much for them to go up. Just because people are finally catching on with, hey, you know, maybe my Windswept Heath is going to get reprinted. It might not be a bad idea to pick this copy up for a buck or two. Or, you know, like even down the line, $5 or $10 sounds a lot better than $50 or $60 if you're just looking for it for casual play.
I mean, do we think that, and this is something that's been going on for a while, do you think that though, would it help Legacy if they were made legal for Legacy? And do you think that's something that could actually happen?
I mean, I've been a major advocate for that. I've really wanted that to happen for years, but I don't know that they can necessarily do it without breaking the trust of some of the players. Like, I think that's, I don't know. Like, the way I could see you doing it is if they're really, you know, diehard about wanting to make them Legacy legal, make it so, you know, you have to have a cap of how many gold border cards you can have in your deck. So, you know, if you want to have 4 Force of Will, so you don't have to pay for those, you can't also have all of your fetches and something else being gold boarded, because it really just feels kind of like a cop out.
I get
it. And it also just hurts the secondary market a lot more.
I don't think you can have a tournament and say you can only have this many, and then when somebody deck checks.
No, it would just be ground rules of you can only have 10. I mean, there's plenty of games. I mean, Yu-Gi-Oh pulls it off just fine, and they do the same thing. I mean, obviously comparing Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh is not great, but
I mean that's just super confusing to somebody. Like, either they should be legal or they shouldn't be. I mean, there's no, if Wizards is making that decision, they're doing it because they want more people to play Legacy, and they don't really care if somebody thinks it's a cop-out, you know? You know, the bigger question is, do the things like, I mean, does the different back and all of this, does that, I mean, would that negatively impact tournament play if people were using them? I mean, they already have double-faced cards, so you can't really make the, you have to have a sleeve argument.
Yeah, no, I don't really think so. Like you said, you already have to have sleeves. It's not like you can tell from the back of the card through. You have to be careful on what kind of sleeves people can use because they don't have Magic card backs. So I think it forces them to enforce the rules a little differently. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be positive because there are plenty of tournament legal sleeves right now where, I mean, the other backs are so different that there would be some way to tell through them, but they are currently legal now. So I don't know. Like it's certainly a potential possibility. But I don't think Wizards is anywhere near the point where they're going to decide yes or no on that right now. But I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm saying pick them up purely for the fact that EDH crowds don't care. And the more people that get into EDH and the more people pick up these Commander decks, I mean, everybody is so happy to see all of these Commander cards coming down in price because, A, they're so much easier to move for the vendors. But on top of that, they're just easier to get a hold of. Like, people can play these more powerful decks without having to have a bunch of money. And again, the gold border cards are a great option to, you know, keep fulfilling that for players who want to get into EDH cheap. they'll still have a deck that can compete with, you know, the guys that are LGS who are FNOM grinders or PTQ grinders, even if they may not be.
Okay, so my pick of the week is a Modo pick, no surprise, and it's going to be Cavern of Souls. It's at a low, low price of $3.75. And yeah, I just think that's criminal. This card is going to be seen play in internal formats. This card is a great card to have. So once people start picking up on this for, you know, Modern, and once the cards in Innistrad and Avacyn Restore start to go up, they're going to stay at their higher price. And they've been, usually you'll start to see a spike in the cards from after rotation, but these cards have been suppressed for quite a while. I think it's mostly due to the Modern season being pushed back so far away that these cards haven't really shot up like they have in previous times. But yeah, Cavern of Souls, I don't think you're going to get it cheaper than $3.75. So pick up some copies, pick up a few play sets or whatever, however deep you want to go. I don't think you're going to go wrong.
Sounds good. I'm going to pull a Corbin this week and not just steal somebody else's pick like he did to me, because he's that sort of person. I have 99 picks of the week. Ready? Decree of Pain, Soul Ring, Baleful Strix, Command Tower, Jaleva, Augur Bullish,
really?
Fogbank, Nightscape Familiar.
Really?
The 99 cards in the Mindseize deck that are not the True Name Nemesis, everyone is undervaluing right now. They're going to the store, they're buying this for $30. They're, cracking it open, making the $10 on the flip of the True Name Nemesis. The rest of the stuff in that deck is going to tank. But it is going to go back up over time. Decree of Pain, ridiculous in EDH. Command Tower goes in every deck. Soul Ring goes in every deck. Baleful Strix goes in a lot of Legacy decks. I think all of these cards are going to be really undervalued right now because everybody's just flipping through Mind Seizes super fast, just trying to get those True Name Nemesis out. If you look how many were in the top 16 of the last Legacy Open, you look how many we had in DC at the Legacy Grand Prix. True Name Nemesis is the boogeyman in Legacy right now, and people are popping these decks open. A lot of LGSs are saying they've run through their allotment. They're not getting any more until January. So we could be seeing the end of the supply right now. You'll still be able to find them at Walmart and stuff like that, at Target. I can still find them on the shelves there. But I think if somebody is flipping grabbing that Mindseize and flipping the True Name Nemesis, they've got 99 cards they don't know what to do with. I think you can get super cheap Soul Rings, super cheap Strixes, Command Towers, Decree of Pain, all kind of stuff. I think you want to be picking that stuff up now, because I don't think it's going to be cheaper than it is now. Soul Ring hit like $3 to $5, a couple years ago when the Commander decks came out, and I don't think seeing a $10 Soul Ring a year down the road is going to be that crazy. So I really think the stuff is at its absolute floor right now.
Yeah, I mean, like the Soul Ring from the original Commander is now like between $8 and $9. The Soul Ring from this Commander is $4. I mean, Soul Ring's a Soul Ring. They can't say this cheap for long if the other Soul Rings are all more expensive. I think, all those cards are probably fine and to good. I think Soul Ring and Command Tower are the ones I really want in on. So those are the ones that go in every deck. I mean, regardless of color, they go in 99% of EDH decks.
Hey, I got another pick of the week.
We've done 103 picks of the week.
So this one's the most important one. I suggest that you guys should pick up Portals. They're now going for 166,000 cookies.
Oh my god.
And once you get that, the game just changes.
Get this game out of here. Stupid cookie game. Seriously, people, you're gonna think we're joking, and you're gonna think I'm joking when I say we're joking.
Don't click the link that I put in the show notes with 16-point font. Don't click it.
Jason's putting it there because he, doesn't want to feel like he's the only one wasting his life playing this game. That's why he gave it to us, so he could draw us all in. Like, just don't do it.
Friends don't let friends click cookies. Wow. You could drink a beer, though, while you're driving. You're all right, but don't click that cookie.
Speaking of a beer, what's everybody drinking tonight? What is everybody drinking?
I'm drinking a chelada, which is basically like a clamato and a beer. It's mixed in a can together. It's a Modelo chelada. This is good stuff here, baby.
I had Jason's
like a
favorite
chillada,
beer.
Like
C-H-I-L-L? Michelada is how it is. C-H-E-L-A-D-A.
Because I know like chelada is a style of beer. It's sort of like the lime and salt flavor of a like a Mexican pilsner. So
yeah, well you do that, but you mix.
You have that with tomato in it.
Well, yeah, they mix it with clamato. It's supposed to be lime and that, and mixed with Clamato. And you bet you could get them at bars, and they make them. They're pretty good. But they got, like, these pre-made cans that are actually pretty tasty. Budweiser has them. And now I found one, a Modelo, that I just found one that's actually pre-made. And I think the Budweiser one might be a little bit better flavor-wise. Really? Yeah. Because I don't think this uses actual Clamato. It uses more of a tomato juice, so you don't get that clam flavor. I think that clam flavor really brings out the beer. I think beer-wise, this is a better beer, but I think flavor-wise, the Budweiser one might actually be better.
Very cool. Tonight I'm repping the Mitten State. Atwater Brewery in Detroit, Michigan is a relatively new brewery on the Michigan brewery scene. Cherry Stout is the beer I'm drinking. It is, as far as cherry stouts go, this is pretty exceptional. The cherry flavor is not overwhelming. It's not too bitter. And it doesn't feel like you're chewing it like some cherry stouts where they just really overdo it on the stout. I don't know. If you can get Atwater beer where you are, I would definitely recommend giving that a try. And Detroit's economy is in shambles, so anything you can do to help out the city of Detroit and keep the robot apocalypse that was prophesied in the movie RoboCop from coming soon, if you could do that, that'd be great.
Beautiful. I'm keeping it classy with a Bud Light Lime, as usual. Jason's
favorite. Even open your mouth?
Hey.
Hey man, you asked the question. Some people like Bud Light Lime.
You are classy if you drink water, you know. There's a certain level of that.
Yeah,
oh, okay. So that makes me not as trashy then. I thought I was gonna be the worst one drinking a green tea with no alcohol, but, I guess, Corbin wins.
You're fired from the brewery.
Yeah, man.
You're not drinking on your lunch break.
I got 4% alcohol on these beers, okay? This is Oklahoma where we make our beer like piss.
Great. You sound proud of that.
Like, yeah, like.
Yeah.
I wish I want to catch that.
I don't even need a rebuttal there. Like,
yeah, I think
great.
I think that sarcasm didn't come across very
you
well.
You hoity-toity Yankees head. With your greater than 4% beer and your dental care.
Yeah. Yeah. The sarcasm did not come through on that one. You sounded genuinely concerned for your own safety.
I can't say that I'm surprised because, you know, usually I am proud of stuff from Oklahoma. The content of our beers, not one of those things though. So something else happened this week. A little thing called Magic Online it was announced that, you know, hey, it's going to exist again.
Yeah, baby. Thank you, Lord.
So what exactly is coming back, Corbin?
So what's coming back is, because Corbin doesn't know, he doesn't play Moto, so don't listen to that guy.
Thank you for rescuing me there. Jason was about to get an stuff.
I wanted an stuff. I was going to laugh.
Stuff is coming back. Listen.
No, tell us, Corbin, what's coming back? Please explain this. I want to hear what you got to say, what it is.
Okay. From what I understand, there's like a Friday Night Magic every night on Moto, and you can go and you can play in these daily events. And I think those are coming back. So it's like Friday Night Magic every night of the week, and you can do that again. On December 11th, I believe. True, false?
Okay, somewhat. There's two things that they got going on, which are the top tier tournament things that they got on Magic Online are PTQ and Mox related. Mox, which is the Magic Online Championship Series. Those are, say, your tier one tournaments. Your tier two tournaments are daily events and premier events. Basically, daily events happen every 4 hours and they go throughout the week. And these are four round, Swisses, and you play, and the prize payout for those are set. And then you got the premier events. Premier events happen on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and they're scheduled, and they scale based on the rounds, based on how many people actually enter into the event. And then they cut to a top eight. And these, have a much larger payout and attract, you know, higher quality players. And so these are the bread and butter basically of Moto. And, the grinders. So the people are going to be able to go back to making their money playing Moto, and people are going to, constructive events are going to be firing. Sure, you're not going to get the PTQs. Sure, you're not going to get the mocks as they were, but honestly, the PTQs only offered one slot and you had 850 people signing up for these PTQs. So like the value just wasn't there really. Honestly, they need to really fix the PTQ and have maybe, you know, multiple 28 person events and then have that go to somehow and or have more slots that give away. But actually having the daily events come back to me that the economy is going to be fixed. We already see that the prices have stabilized and they have came back basically to pre-crash. And this is before the daily events. So we're going to see, you know, the demand for cars go back up once the daily events start to fire again. So, you know, the motopocalypse has happened. It has passed and we're going to be moving forward now.
So in terms of finance, is now still like a good time to buy in, or, you know, when did the prices bottom out? Was it immediately following the suspension of events, or, you know, kind of what's the market done in the past 2 weeks and where is it going to go in the next 2 weeks?
The market has brought back the time was it 2 weeks ago when it was announced, like when we received the announcement, literally the day after we recorded was the best time to get in. And that Friday, by the time our cast came out, like it was still good enough to buy in. It wasn't the best, but it was still good enough to buy in. Right now, prices have stabilized. We've seen cars actually, like Mutavolt was up to 22 tickets, yesterday, which is above about its price that it was before the crash. So it was at a high point. So we're seeing cars already, you know, back to normal. So buy-in time, if you want to get in, you're buying in normally as you were before. So you're going to buy in cars that you want to play with, and specs are going to be a lot harder. You're not going to find many good specs this season. You're pretty much going to be specking for when Born of the Gods comes in, because if you look at the meta's pretty much devotion only, so you're not getting a lot of merc technique
right now. So what about, like, long-term? You know, do we think that them taking this step and saying, hey, we actually care about our product, we're not going to run events that don't work anymore, assuming it comes back and these events don't crash, I mean, sure, Moto decline is still not incredible, but do you think, like, it raises – you know, you, at least your confidence as a consumer and the product?
Extremely. I mean, the fact that they took down the events honestly built my confidence as a consumer, even though I was kind of uncertain. I didn't buy in like I should have when they were rock bottom, because I thought they were going to drop a little bit more, and I was kind of busy with work. But, yeah, my confidence is at an all-time high. I really think that they're going to get it down. They said in the report that PTQ events are probably not going to get running until after the qualifiers for Journey into Nyx are going to be ending, so that's probably not till next year. But you know what? They're going to figure it out. They're going to get it right, because they make so much money through Moto. So it's to me, it's just signaling that they're doing the right thing. Now, when they actually get a Moto that I'll actually like to play, as the beta is not nearly there yet towards my standards, I still play version 3, so that still has a long way to go. But the fact that they can get the back end working correctly, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, I mean, that's a start. Maybe one day it'll entice me to get into Moto. I should like Moto. I have the schedule where it would be nice to draft online. I mean, I've done 2 Theros drafts in my life because I don't play Moto. So it would be nice if, you know, they do enough to make me want to play.
You'll join the dark side one day. I mean, there's no reason not to. I mean, you're stuck in Oklahoma where, you know, nobody knows how to play Magic. So, you know, that's the only option.
Hey, now we have Grand Prix champions here. We have people who do well in Pro Tours.
I'm sorry, did my sarcasm not travel well through the mic?
burn!
So let's go back now. You know, we mentioned Splinter Twinner when we talked about Spellsky. And this came up, you know, through Reddit and through, it kind of comes up whenever cards spike. A lot of times, people who maybe don't understand the market, they want to point to speculators and say, oh, it's just all these speculators buying up Splinter Twin. That's why the price went up. It's not, you know, a real thing or whatever. And, you know, I think we all more or less disagree with that for different reasons. But let's talk about this. Do you guys start with this question? Do you think that speculators getting in on the market on a card that's, you know, starting to see more play in Splinter Twin, and do you think that they can create a market where there wasn't one before? I mean, can you really manipulate the price of a card in a profitable way? Is that something that, you know, as a consumer, you should be looking out for? Like, what are you guys' thoughts on that?
Yes.
Not accidentally.
I think the biggest, like, the market for publicly accessible cards is not friendly enough to really be able to make enough unless you have, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars to pump into it. However, you know, those cards that might see minor amounts of play and that you can capitalize on picking up the only 100 copies on the market, you can make a lot off that. But you can't, like, I don't see someone taking a standard card and saying, you know what, I want this to be $40. It has to be agreed upon either within the speculating community and a bunch of people go in, or It has to be something where everyone has independently decided, yeah, this card's just good, and they go in on it.
So, the common denominator there is people have to decide that the card is good. Say that, you know, tomorrow we all decide that, you know, pick whatever bulk mythic from 5 years ago you want, you know? Okay, so let's say that we want to make a run on this card, and we all go buy a bunch of them. Is it possible for us to move the price enough to justify the investment, like to make enough money there? Is that something that you guys think can happen?
Yes, but I think you, it depends. Are you like trying to out it back to a buy list, or are you trying to sell these independently? Because that's a major part of it.
The idea is that there's no demand for the card. We're just artificially going to create a supply issue by buying up a card. Because that's what, you know, when people talk about, people were honestly saying that Splinter Twin's not a real thing. This is just speculators buying up the card. This isn't going to hold. You know, my response to that is, that's not true because I've bought a lot of cards. A lot of people bought that never moved. People bought a lot of Alorans. That price is back to where it is where it was a year ago. You know, my response is speculators can move the market on a card higher than maybe it would go if none of them bought any. But you can't just create the market for that card.
Like, speculators eventually have to cash out, and they're going to dump the cards. Someone's got to be buying them.
Right, exactly.
So the price is going to go down. When you're trying to sell a Lurin for 15 bucks and nobody wanted it, you're like, well, shit, I bought it in at 4. Buy it for 15, and people are like, nobody wants a Lurin. But people were, like, accusing one of our writers of making Threads of Disloyalty go up based on an article that 2,000 people read, which I just thought was ludicrous. Like, what happened was he was ahead of the card that was going to go up anyway. The market was showing signs of the copies were selling out on TCG Player, like.
It was all over the top. Yeah, it was top 8 in a bunch of Moto events in Modern. I mean, there was a market for the card.
If he'd written an article that said, oh, Megnaloth, definitely Megnaloth, right, exactly. You know, and we bought a bunch of Megnaloths, that's one thing, but if you're ahead of a card, that's not you being a speculator, that's you being smart and paying attention.
See, I think what speculators do as far as moving a card is it creates velocity. And, you know, if you got definitely through Twitter, you'll see speculators seeing other speculators talking about a card or saying this card is good. And all of a sudden there's a hype behind it. It takes more than you and a couple of friends creating the hype. It takes other people actually believing into it. But I think that, you know, right. Once the information is traveling, it spreads pretty fast. And that is when, you know, speculators actually make the card go a little bit higher than it should be. But if you're trying to artificially create it, I think you're just going to be shooting yourself in the foot.
Do people really think that we could do that week after week and just arbitrarily pick a card that there's no demand for and trick people into buying it and then say, haha, and rub our hands evilly and then sell out and we made our money and they're stuck with all these copies? Do they think people would do that week to week? Would people listen to us after a while?
Not only that, but
I mean, that's not even how the market can work, because even if we buy all of these copies, you know, and to try and make money off it and then we spread the word of it and then vendors sell out, they're only going to need X amount of copies because they're going to look at it and go, well, before this, our numbers show that we only sold 2 in the past 6 months. Is this seeing play? They're not going to go back out and stock 50 back up most of the time. I mean, some of the major vendors might, but you're only going to be able to sell 10 or 20 copies at most of the time. And then it's going to come back on. You're still going to have 100 copies, and slowly the market, these vendors are going to realize, okay, they're not selling. So it was just someone fucking around. Market will drop back down and your copies go back to being worthless.
Right.
So that's the greater fool theorem at work. Like, if you're hoping to buy like that, you've got to have somebody to sell to. So what you've got to do is hope that there are people dumb enough to buy a card that there's no demand for, and there just people aren't dumb enough.
Right.
Like,
I mean,
even
that's
if
not,
you wanted to
not
be evil fucks and try to trick people, like, we just, that couldn't happen.
It's like when Marcel was talking about, like, the thing you said is people have to be saying it's good. The hype can't just, and not one person can create hype. Like, Splinter Twin is, like, I mean, it's a real thing. It's a real deck. It's, people have made innovations to it. It's gotten even better in the past 6 months. Like, that is a real card with real demand for it. And yes, now when people start buying that card, the price is going to go up and people are going to start following them and everyone's going to buy it. And, you know, the next thing you know, it's a $10 card. But the market supported that for a reason. The market did not support the price jump on Hall of the Bandit Lord. It did not support the price jump on Alorn. Like, just because the retail price moves higher because somebody buys all the cheap copies doesn't mean that they're selling. And that's, it's like, we can't just say, you know what, I've got a bunch of money to burn, I'm going to pick a card and make it go up. That's That's you can't do that. If you are ahead of the curve and you find a card like Splinter Twin and buy a bunch of copies and the price goes up and then it stays there because there's real demand for it, well, good job. That's called being ahead of the market.
See, if we could actually move the price on something, Ryan would have done it with Seance.
Well, right. Yeah, that's what, yeah, like Jason's comment on the Reddit thread was, you know, if we could do this, Seance would be $10 and I would own my house. That's not how it works.
Right. And the thing was, like, that was a card that was actually seeing play and I couldn't get it to go up. Like, so you're definitely not going to get a card that sees zero play to go up. I mean, that actually had results behind it, just not enough to make people want to buy in or, you know, enough people to want to play the deck.
And I mean,
like, it actually takes quite a bit to move a card's price.
Right. And like, it obviously works better with older cards because there's just not as many out there. But you know what? With Splinter Twin, the retail price, the card was steadily and steadily over a period of months decreasing in supply. The price on it hadn't moved, but there were fewer and fewer copies being out there. So, you know, then when somebody goes out and buys those copies, then you actually see the price movement upwards. But like, if you're following that card, you should know that it's dwindling in copies, and that's the important part, and that's called being a good speculator. You know, that's not manipulation.
Oh, and especially on Splinter Twin, we were forewarned because the European market was sold out at 10 euros for a week and a half before it spiked in the US. Like, we had so much warning, it's insane. Can you imagine any other commodity, like aluminum selling out in Europe for 25 bucks a pound, and then, you know, everyone in the US is like, oh, that's a bummer about Europe for a week and a half. That would never happen. We had so much goddamn time to buy Splinter Twins. Like, this wasn't a surprise to anybody who was paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, somebody said people don't like to miss it, and they don't like to be the people who aren't ahead of the game. You know, nobody likes to miss a boat, and they want something to blame, so they blame speculators. You know, I don't know, you know, if that's, you know, at work or not. I'm sure maybe that's part of it in some cases, but I guess the overall point, you know, that I just wanted to make is that there's nobody behind the scenes here just saying, hey, this week we're going to make this card go up and it's going to be a $10 card and everyone's going to be mad about it and we're going to make our money and we don't care. The cards are going where they're going. You're just trying to be there ahead of the game.
Otherwise, it'll be an Alluren and you'll see that. You'll see the buy price doesn't go up. The buy price on Splinter Twin's going up because dealers want it.
Yeah.
Nobody was stocking Alluren.
The retail price of Alluren moved because people bought the cheap copies, but the buy price on it did not go up very much. It would have been extremely difficult if you are at home trying to play market manipulator to go buy 200 copies of whatever card you want and then find a way to sell it if there's no real demand. So I think if you're somebody who's coming in new to, you know, the finance game and following the financial market, you should just be aware that these things are never overnight surprises, except in the case of, you know, like a Pro Tour spike where, you know, something or an unbanning, like those things are literally overnight. Splinter Twin was months in the making.
So what you do at home, if you can't tell if this is a real spike or the result of manipulation, which happens so infrequently that we can name it by name, like saying, oh, with Alluren, you just look at deck results. Is Splinter Twin in a lot of decks? Or is it a four of in a prominent deck? Was it from a low supply? You know, you just look at stuff like that, and that'll tell you if it's real. Something like Alluren, they were just banking on this being, you know, a reserve list card that there was low supply on, and it could potentially, you know, get there because it's the marquee card in a deck that was more affordable due to the reprinting of the Recruiter. But that was all total speculation, and that was one or two actors buying on a large scale. And, you know, maybe they made their money back, but maybe not.
So have we ever found out where they got their insider information or if they did get insider information or anything on that? Or is that just still speculation in the air on that end?
I haven't heard anything.
I mean, no, we don't know the story where they got their information, but that, I mean, obviously that's what happened.
Probably they had a time machine and they're making 100,000 cookies a second.
My God.
That's a segue.
Let the cookies go.
No, we're going to be cooking these cookies throughout the entire podcast, just like our listeners are when they listen to this podcast, because we hooked them in early. we should get some kind of sponsorship from these guys.
No, shouldn't.
Are they going to pay us in cookies? Like, who needs that? We're going to pay you guys 100,000 cookies a second.
Oh, wow. But no milk.
Stop talking about cookies.
I can't. Guys, don't click the link that I've prominently displayed in the show notes with an arrow pointing to it that says don't click this link. Make sure you do that.
Let's talk about a good time that's going to happen where we're not going to have cookies, we're not going to have milk, but we're going to have a whole lot of booze and a whole lot of snow. GP Montreal.
I thought you were talking about GP Toronto, which is, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen, and I'm not going to be there, so I don't really care. But GP Montreal happening the 15th or 16th of March next year. I got my plane ticket booked. We're going to be jumping on this A-team drunk train. We're going to get there on Friday, and then we're going to go to our hotel spot that we got. We're going to have be in the same hotel as the WOTC staff and also with Heavy Meta and the A-team. So if anybody else is out going there to GP Montreal, hit us up so we get you in the list and rotation so you can hang out with all the cool people who we are. Really not cool, but you can hang out with us anyway and drink all the booze that we're going to have. That's going to be the booze. That sounds horrible.
You guys can drink the booze. It's going to be the booze. I'm drinking the booze.
I'm looking at my cookies and I'm like...
Stop with the cookies.
I need another time machine.
Just so you guys, time machines yet?
Man, just so everyone at home knows, this game makes you click the cookie, right? Marcel, how many clicks do you have?
Let me see.
1,000.
You don't have to click the cookie. You're allowed to click the cookie.
I got 27 clicks.
27,000.
Yeah.
Marcel's clicked his cookie 27,000 times. For the love of Christ, do not download this game or play it or whatever.
I've only clicked 5,000 times.
Yeah, much better.
See, I have a compulsive disorder when it comes to stuff like this. That's why I was like, oh, crap. But at least I'm almost on my third time machine. I'm like, I just need more clicks.
I'm just sitting here trying to do the math in my head to figure out the most efficient way to make this work.
Someone can figure this out. They're going to have the optimal points, the apex for each item that you get and when you're supposed to do your upgrades for this. I bet you somebody has already figured it out.
It'll take an Excel spreadsheet, honestly.
Yeah. Some guru, please, by next week, I'm sure somebody's going to show us something, or maybe we could Google it and we might be able to find a link, you know, but we're too lazy to do that. We're too busy clicking cookies.
I hope Cookie Monster doesn't listen to our podcast and find the link.
Oh, but GP Montreal, are you guys excited about this, or you guys don't even sound like anything's going on for you?
I mean, I haven't really made any plans that far in advance yet, so it's kind of a surreal thing to me still. It's off in the distance, so I'll get there.
This is like GP Vegas of next year.
It's not GP Vegas. We're trying to force it to be GP Vegas, and it's going to be GP not as good as Vegas and therefore disappointing because we built it up too much, which won't fit in a hashtag. I tried. That's way more than 140 characters.
Well, I got higher hopes and aspirations, and I think we're going to have a great time, so.
Last time I was in Montreal, Ryan, were you with us? Yeah, it was you, me, and Aaron. Like, we got out of the venue at 9:30, and every restaurant in downtown Montreal was fucking closed on a Saturday night. There was like 2 Chinese restaurants open, and they were packed because they were the only things that were open.
On a Saturday night?
On a Saturday night. And everybody was speaking French, even the homeless people accosting us. Oh, j'ai besoin d'argent. Oh, t'as besoin d'argent. It was terrible.
Time machine number 3. I'm making 420,000 cookies a second.
Oh my god.
I hate you, Jason. I hate you with every piece of my
soul. I'm not even playing it. I'm just like watching it.
You started this. You are responsible.
Okay, so GP Montreal, I hope it's good. I hope it's another Vegas, but I also know that it could potentially be GP Letdown.
It's going to be GP, we're not going to want to go outside or do anything or sit, you know, by a nice warm pool because it's going to be 30 fucking degrees outside.
I'm going to throw this out there. What if it was just GP Montreal and it was what it was?
I'm happy with that.
That's what I want. Like, I don't expect every GP to go to. I'm sorry. I don't think Vegas is going to be beat for a while. Like, yeah. It took three years of constant GPs to replace my last most memorable GP before Vegas. So
but honestly,
I don't know,
because my best memories from Vegas were from the house. Like, the GP venue was fine, it was crazy. But I didn't play the event, I just sold shit and like, honestly walked around talking to people, because there were like 6,000 people in that room, and there were people that I had never met before and only talked to online. I met so many people. So that's what was cool about Vegas. Like, Montreal is just hanging out with the other podcast guys, that's what's gonna roll.
It's gonna be cold. We don't have like a pool, and it's not kickback and chill. Like, I don't know. I think it's just gonna be a different atmosphere too.
Well, we're gonna have a hotel, and we're gonna try to rent out a whole floor. One, and then two. You know, they got. I'm sure they got indoor pool and indoor spa, And then the funnest part of the house was the house of Vegas. So we're basically, you know, sure we got the GP and all, but we got everyone that's going to have all the great fun and the same floor in a hotel. Just, there's a lot of room for good times and just everything off site. Like everything that's not at the GP, cause it's a limited GP. So I'm kind of like, on that. So, you know.
Vegas was limited.
Yeah, but it was Modern Masters and I had a great pool, so I wasn't going to drop.
Okay, so the unlikely event that anybody that listens to our podcast is in the weight loss competition, the weigh-in will be at GP Montreal, so good luck to everybody. I'm definitely going to make the goal. Like, I'm over halfway there and it's not even December yet.
And for our pick of the week contest, we got all the submissions in and we'll be picking someone, I believe, next week or the week after. And then we got our tokens. We're going to have our art coming in. For our special DERF token, we're going to announce that. We got DERF doing a token, and we'll give you more details about exactly what's on the token once it gets done. But we're going to have those, and we're going to send those out to everyone. They sent in their submissions for picks of the week. They'll get a set of four different tokens. So our four tokens going, and then anybody else that wants some of these tokens, we're going to add a set of four. You can buy them for $1, and you can get four tokens and then pay for the shipping. So, we'll have those up very soon. You can check out the cool tokens that we got going.
We've also, yeah, we've got the Seder tokens, done by a local Oklahoma artist as well, coming in pretty soon. They'll be pretty awesome. The Xenaghost tokens, you know, your 2/2 Seders with haste. So, they're looking pretty cool as well. So we've got lots of free stuff coming your guys' way.
And the website will be improved. That's in the process right now. Hopefully we could have that going by the end of the year. But it's a process to say, and we're definitely trying to improve the way the site looks and the way the site operates, and to say modernize it. We don't want to be in the 1990s like the Modo program. We actually want to be in this decade.
Yeah, so let's talk about now. Standard is, you know, people were talking about last week, Standard being more or less figured out with just being these devotion decks. And the other thing that's going on is, you know, we're heavily into Theros drafting and redemption and all of this stuff. And prices are, you know, steadily coming down at this point. And, you know, we'll probably bottom out in the next several months. Where do you think people should be putting their money right now, just in kind of general terms, since Theros cards are probably not where you want to be? What do you guys think?
I think there are Theros cards, but it's the ones that are going to be more conducive to the next set. I think I say this every time we ask them, like, why isn't Soldier of the Pantheon worth more? If we're going to have multicolored gods in the next set, Soldier of the Pantheon is going to be an absolute beating.
Yeah.
I mean, if that happens, yeah, that's still speculation at this point, but.
Yeah, I think that's because, like, we were looking at this time last year with Ravnica Standard and Innistrad, and we were having new decks. This was right before the time that the Craterhoof Behemoth deck started to take hold. And, like, Standard was still evolving. Here, Standard is figured out. We just have, what, 90% of the format is, what, mono blue devotion blue or mono black devotion. And it's just like, you know, like this is kind of sad. Like, you know, these decks don't have the chance to shine. So I do think that in the next set and Born of the Gods, the next one is going to open up the multicolor a little bit. And Nyxos is not going to have the stranglehold, or devotion is not going to have the stranglehold on Standard as it is. So I just, yeah, I think there is good cards in Theros. You just got to think about multicolored when Born of the Gods comes out.
I don't know if I agree 100%. I know I wrote in my article on Tuesday that, well, there's two decks, and it's figured out. It's kind of a solid format. That's based on the GP results. So the Owen Turtenwalds of the world are like, you know, I've got that extra 5% against the field playing this mono blue deck. But I think if you look at the Star City Open, that was the exact same day. So while all the, you know, the GP players were running the mono blue and the mono black, and that was most of the top eight, you look at the Open, and there were, I think, six different decks. So there are still other archetypes. There's a red-white. There's actually a lot of red-white decks. There's the red-white kind of beatdown with the Daring Skyjack and stuff like that. I don't know if that's great going forward because the black decks are starting to run Shrivel, and that kind of pulls that deck's pants down. But you have a mono-red devotion splashing white. Brian Braun-Duin is brewing, trying to make Heliod a thing in a three-color deck, you know, with white devotion. That could be good. There's green-white, all kinds of different green-white decks. There's, like, aggro decks, and there's the populate-type stuff. So the format is, I guess, quote-unquote, solved when it comes to, like, people like Sam Black that aren't going to take a chance on a brew. But as far as going to like an SCG Open or playing, you know, the first 10 rounds of a GP, there are a lot more decks. But I think what we're seeing right now is, it's kind of a skill-based format, which is why you see Owen Turtenwald and Sam Black top eighting back-to-back GPs, which is unprecedented.
See, this is exactly where, I think that sure, SCG events are good events and there's good players there, but the GPs has a caliber of player that's above and beyond. And I think, you know, you see in Sam Black. Sam Black is a deck builder. Sam Black likes creative decks and he likes to play that, but he's been on this Mono Blue hype because most likely Mono Blue is a legit deck and it's going to be here. And the same with Mono Black. You see Mono Black, you know, Owen Turtenwald doing what he got to do, winning two GPs back to back. And both those players are getting consistent results, going high. And I think it's just that the matter of the fact of speaking up how good these decks actually are in the hands of good players. Sure, you have a wide variety of other decks in the lower end of the field, but when you really get to the top eight, that's really what counts. That's really what the metagame is.
What are we even talking about? The GP before was Legacy.
No, the GP, that was DC was Legacy, and then
yeah, DC was
the
Legacy.
The last one was Standard. Turtwell, the one that went was Standard with the Mono Black right. Devotion deck.
Where was that?
This was at Albuquerque.
Yes. Oh, Albuquerque last weekend.
Albuquerque was last weekend, yeah, but the one before that was DC.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so they didn't win two Standard GPs back to back with the same deck.
No, but
which is sort of what I thought I was implying, and then I realized that's not really what happened.
Well, Legacy and Standard are both skill-based at the moment, so, I mean, your point still stands, right?
but it doesn't relate to Standard being a solid format.
I think.
As much. It's not as oppressive.
I don't think there's as much variety in Standard. You're not seeing Sphinx's Revelation decks really hitting the top eight. That's saying something right there. That's honestly saying something.
Esper still, I don't know. To me, like, sure, Mono Blue and Mono Black at this point may be the two best decks or whatever. But they're not unbeatable. You know, they're not oppressive. The format's more or less open, I think. Which is, you know, saying something for Standard because it's a lot of years it is not like this. But going back to our original question, like where you should put your money right now. Honestly, like I'm less excited about Standard and getting in on Theros cards as I am about to get in on Modern cards. Not even talking about, you know, like the ones we think we're going to spike, like, you know, Splinter Twin and Spellskite and those. Just like the staples, like Path to Exile and stuff. People are very much into Standard right now, and Modern, while sure it's happening, Modern season is still a very long way away, and prices on those staple cards aren't going to be cheaper in 3 to 6 months than they are right now. And I think there's probably more growth potential and just getting in on some of those Modern cards right now than there is getting in on Theros cards, which are going to continue to drop unless you pick the right speculation cards for the next set. So like that's what I'm doing right now. It's just trying to stock up on Modern staples and prepare. Like, so when Modern season comes around, people start wanting to make their decks. You don't want to be the person then who's trying to track down all the Modern staples to trade out. You want to already have them because you got them now. You just got to stay ahead of the market.
Well, Theros cards that I think that are suppressed, well, at least on Modo. Okay. So this is my understanding of Modo. You got a Soldier of the Pantheon, which is 70 cents. You got Sylvian Caryd, which is 80 cents. You have Fleece Maid Lion, which is 55 cents. You have Anger of the Gods, which is 60 cents. And as well as like Temple of Mystery, which is 70 cents, and Temple of Bannon, which is 60 cents. All right. These are cards that I think are being suppressed right now, that I think when we see cards from Porn of the Gods, that these cards will go up in value. I think, again, December may be the lowest point, and that may be when you want to buy on these cards, when they're about 50 cents or less. But these are all cards that should be $2-$3 cards. Maybe not when Born of the Gods, but at least when rotation comes. So you're not going to find these cards cheaper than you will in December. And I think those are good times to spec on these cards. I mean, you got what? Reaper of the Wild, which is another card that went up a little bit, but is still not reaching this full potential. I mean, I think there's a lot of decent cards within Theros that you can pick up on that you can speculate, but it'll be more of a long-term spec.
I also think that and this goes for, I will talk about Standard for Theros and Ravnica block cards as well, is to look at cards in the colors that don't have scry lands yet. Like Fleece Maid Lion, you know, we talk about these green-white decks that are kind of in and out, and they're doing that with Guild Gates right now. I mean, when they get a green-white scry land, you know, it's not like game-breaking, you know, it doesn't completely change the landscape or anything, but like cards, those type of decks will get an improvement just simply because of that land. I mean, like, so Loxodon Spider and Fleece Mane Lion are both probably good ones. You know, possibly Voice of Resurgence, though the buy-in point on that maybe makes it a little less exciting. But I would also look at, you know, that and the other color combinations that maybe it'll open up the deck building possibilities when they get their Scry land.
It seems like they'll probably get a few decent cards to in those color combinations to go with the Scry land also. But that's not necessarily what we saw in Theros.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just more, I just in terms of staying ahead of it, if those decks are made better because of, made enough better by having those Scry lands, take the cards that'll be impacted by it.
I know a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, once we get the red-blue Scry land, it'll be a thing. No, you're wrong. Everything in Izzet is bad and costs one mana too much. I'd like Izzet to be good, but I'm sorry, it's not.
I mean, I really like green-white, I think, more than any. I think green-white probably benefits the most from having that land, because it's already, just like, you know, when the season rolled around, I thought Night Vale Spectre was a good pickup because Night Vale Spectre was already seen play and block. So it was already kind of there on that edge. It's kind of the same way with the green-white decks right now. They're already on the edge of being playable, even if they're not that top tier. But you know what? Those decks get a lot easier to play once you get the land. So that's kind of just how I'm looking at the format to try to find the next targets.
I think most SCG top eights have a green-white deck.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, say when the land comes out and maybe it makes it so they go from being, you know, one or two in the SCG top eight to maybe they're putting three, four copies in an open top eight or a GP, you know.
That really depends on Brian Kibler, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he'll do his best for sure.
I think, like, even if you go back to the PT, people like Rob Doherty were having a lot of success early day one before they ran into mono colored devotion decks, you know, playing green white. I think there are a few different ways you can go with it.
Yep. We got a dead horse. That's right. If you read the show notes, Corbin he wants to kick the dead horse or he wants to click on the cookie. Yeah, that sounds horrible.
Time machine. So all right. About the last 10 minutes.
All right, fellas. I think we are at the end of the cast here. Is there anything you guys want to tell people, who you are, where they could reach you at, anything else that people really don't want to know but you want to say?
Well, you can reach me at Corbin Hostler. It's on Twitter at chostler88, C-H-O-S-L-E-R 88. I write for Quiet Speculation and Brainstorm Brewery and Wizards Norman and nerdballmagazine.com, which is fantasy sports if you're into that. Hit us up. Hit me up.
Marcel MTG. That's on Twitter. And that's where you can find me. And that's it. There, brainstormbrewery.com.
Maybe someday Marcel will write an article for brainstormbrewery.com.
Yeah, when I'm not trying to figure out how to build the website that you guys aren't going to help me on whatsoever.
Hey, man, I help. I'm just useless at technology. I live in Oklahoma, remember?
I'm very good at pointing out things that are wrong with the website. Okay, fine. I'll go next. I'm Jason E. Alt on Twitter. AltJason17 at Gmail if you want to send me an angry email, and I know you do. I write for Gathering Magic, Quiet Speculation, Brainstorm Brewery, MTG Price, 60 Cards. Is that still a site? I don't think it is. I think 60 Cards is gone.
Actually down.
PerfectStormMTG.com. I write articles there. Where else? I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Just like eight websites. So I'm everywhere, and I'm on the MTG Finance subreddit a lot, having everybody tell me what a bad person I am, pretty much daily. So that's kind of how I roll.
Well, you know, after you, what do you expect people to say when you do things like make us waste 2 hours clicking a cookie?
Oh, my God.
That's the name of the episode right there. Corbin's dead horse.
This is Jason's dead horse. So this cookie shit is entirely on him.
Oh, you know what? Anyway. We're still clicking. I'm still clicking the cookie.
I'm not clicking. I'm just passively letting my five time machines do the work.
Nobody. I promise you nobody cares.
It's true. I can be found on Twitter at Cripple Command. I write for Gathering Magic and again, supposedly Rainstorm Brewery. So, yeah.
That's seriously, Ryan. Seriously, Ryan. Write a fucking article. Pretty please.
The article's so bad.
Send Ryan angry emails. Tell him to get his shit together and stop being
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
No, don't do that.
Our fans have
can't,
written.
We have fans that have written
six articles in the time it's taken Ryan to write one.
I want to wait till after Toronto. I'm so dead. So many events and
so many excuses. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, like a couple weeks ago, it was Tuesday night. We just got done podcasting and Corbin's like, God, is Ryan going to write his article this week? And then we looked and Corbin was supposed to write it. So he went, oh, okay. And an hour later it was done. Just write the article.
Yeah, but Corbin's a good writer.
I like how you guys aren't going to tell me that shit. So, cool.
Yeah. Great. Why does Marcel?
Marcel writes, Marcel's not the one bitching about it. Marcel, write an article.
I'm not bitching about it.
So this is brainstorming. Do you guys have any shout outs? I know we haven't had any shout outs anytime in a while, so.
I'll give a shout out to Brian Clymer. He's from Oklahoma and he's working on that Seder token for us. He's been going through a lot of revisions with us on it. Or I say revisions, just us saying, oh hey, do you think you can do this? This would be cool, blah, blah, blah. But they are going to turn out pretty cool. So, shout out to him for being awesome working with us on that.
Oh, I got some shout outs. It's like my pick of the week. I got 99 of them. Let's do this real fast. Andrew Coleman, Anthony Capecci, Brian Dale, Caleb Gothberg, Danny Brown, Doug Johnson, Tim Gao, Houston Whitehead, J.W. Graves, Jeff Hoogland, Jim Cassell, Josh Milligan, Chris Piles, Mark Darmond, Matthew Crocker, and Michael Radford. Those are our awesome writers. Danny Brown's our editor. Chris Piles does all of the graphics on the website. That is our Brainstorm Brewery team. They are really awesome. So check our website out and see what they are working hard on every week. For you guys.
Yeah, there's actually some really good articles there, and I'm impressed that these people are writing for us, so you guys are awesome.
And I mean, 95% of those people are from our fan base. So if you listen to that, you're like, wow, I could never be a writer. If you think you got a good idea and you think you could potentially do something like that, it's not too late to submit us an article and see if we can't fit you into our schedule.
Well, I'm going to shout out some podcasts that I particularly like and I keep in rotation. Planeswalker Asylum, Horde of Notions, the A-Team, and Have You Met It, even though they're kind of beefing right now, supposedly. And, yeah, and MTG Brainstorm. I want to shout out you guys. I know I'm missing somebody else out there. I'm sorry if I forgot. But, yeah, keep doing what you guys do. Keep this podcast community going. Limited resources, but, you know, they don't need our shout out.
But A-Team and Have You Met It do, apparently.
Apparently. And so tune in next week because I don't think Ryan has anyone to shout out.
Yeah, not particularly.
Shout out all your friends, Ryan. Oh, you're done? Okay.
Wait, what was it? You said on Facebook the other day to Russ, shout out to a local guy, I guess, who finally started listening to the podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I hope he's listening. Russell Slack, man. Thanks for being a new listener. We appreciate it. I do. That's genuine. That shit's real.
Tune in next week. When Jason isn't sarcastic.
Oh my God, that wasn't sarcastic. No, I'm really glad. I'm glad that in a mere 77 episodes that we got one of our friends from the shop to listen to our podcast. That's a good achievement for us.
78, but who's counting?
So are you really not being sarcastic or is that?
Oh, I don't even know anymore.
We can't tell.
Even I can't tell.
Either way, thank you for listening. We love you guys.
We love all of our fans, even the ones who don't write articles.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.